from the beginning.
And I was shown that that Lucifer would return, that the UN and the Vatican were going to be completely behind it, again, under false pretenses. He's going to show up and say, I'm here to save the day, right? And, okay, fine, you know.
Yeah, of course,
ahead,
you can say whatever you want. But I've always hated censorship. It's the internet.
Sometimes, you know, once they get you for your first love bite, well, it depends on how aware you are, right?
First of all, as you know, the Anunnaki and the Draco are enemies. Second of all, underneath Baghdad was a stargate that was created by the Anunnaki so that they could transfer from the Jupiter to the Earth.
I'll never see the sun. I could just end it all, but the demons will have won.
Actual practitioners that, you know, some are good and some use their magic for good and to heal and to help, and others do use it for evil. And, you know, in some cases, you know, people really were
this is too much sometimes. From the broken ruins of Babylon, this is End of Days Radio. I am your host, Daniel, broadcasting to you all the way from that shimmering emerald city right here in the heart of the Pacific Northwest. Hello, how are you? Today's date is September 11th. 2022. Yes, it is the anniversary of 9/11. Shout out to all of those that are feeling patriotic today. How are you guys doing? Boy, it's good to be back. This is what, the second or third show in our new season of End of Days Radio, if you want to call it that. I do want you guys to remember to go to the website, go to endofdaysradio.com. From there, you can donate. You can join our Discord chat. I do so much appreciate your donations. Thank you so much to everybody who has donated in the past. You guys make such a difference for me in this show. I can do nothing but thank you and thank you and thank you over again. You guys are friggin' awesome. Let's put it that way. I want you guys to also know that we do have a great guest today, but please stay tuned after our guest. That's when we do our roundtable, current events, news section of the show. And that's when you can also join in as well. As you know, this show is for everybody and it features everybody. So if you're into being on a show like this, then please go to the YouTube stream. Look at the top of the chat. There's a link there. This is Join Us. You just click it and you can jump on. And you know what's also cool about that? If you have a question for our guest during the interview segment of the show, feel free to go ahead and jump on and ask your question. You don't have to do it that way either. If you just have a question, you can easily ask questions in the chat itself because I'm keeping an eye on it. So as your questions come in, I can see them. Our guests can see them. And we'll get those questions answered for you. This show is highly interactive. You know what? What I should do is introduce our awesome guest. So once again, we're bringing on Chaz of the Dead. Chaz has been investigating the paranormal and its connections with our consciousness for nearly a decade. In October of 2020, his first book was released, Paranormal Expeditions, Hunt for the Friendship, about his research investigation into a South American UFO case. And it received much acclaim from the paranormal community. These guys are not easy to please, believe you me. Through conducting cutting-edge research and controversial psychedelic experiments, Chaz has continued to push the buck of what it means to investigate the paranormal. He's here to talk to us about The Bed Spear and his new book, A Place Between Time and Space, a true story about ghosts, UFOs, and Florida's strangest home. And without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our man, Chaz of the Dead.
What's going on? Thanks for having me back.
There he is, the man himself. You look good. You look bright and bushy-tailed.
Yeah, I took a good afternoon nap. I went to the Florida game yesterday and had to witness a crushing defeat. So little hungover this morning, but I napped it off and I'm great, ready to go for an awesome show today, man.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. Yeah, you know, that's the thing about sports. Sometimes you walk away with that high of the win and the victory, and unfortunately, with that comes the losses. I was watching a Mariners game just now, and they were up 6-1, and somehow they managed to blow that lead. It kind of brought my day down, so I know exactly how you feel.
It's all right. My Bills are still good this year, so.
They got a good quarterback this year, don't they?
Oh, yeah, Josh Allen, the boy wonder.
Josh Allen, yeah.
He'll carry us to the bowl.
Everybody's got their eyes on him. He's up and coming for sure.
Wow, man. He's the guy.
Now, are the Bills the pick to win the Super Bowl this year? Are they?
You know, some people are saying that, but as a lifelong Bills fan, I won't entertain any of that. Because I have only known them to let me down, so they're never the Super Bowl favorite in my heart. But yes, there's good things are being said about them. I'll say that much.
Well, did you at least have fun at the game? Was it a good time? A lot of
so the game I went to yesterday was Gators college football.
Yeah,
and yeah, it was a blast. You know, $9 beers is always a tough part of going to a stadium and watching a game.
They're gouging $9 a beer at a college game?
For just a little can too. It's rough.
What in the world? $9? Uh-huh. That should buy you two freaking cases.
Yeah. So that combined with the loss, it was a little rough, but it's great to, you know, be out there, get some screaming done. Therapeutic.
Yeah, you know, you never forget those memories of those live games. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely worth heading out. So, on to the main event. I mean, hey, it's been a while since we talked, but it's my understanding that you've got some major things going on.
Yeah. It's been a pretty busy couple months here in the Chaz of the Dead sphere. Got my new book out, A Place Between Time and Space. It's also part of this project I've got going is a petition to recognize the house at the center of this case as a historic landmark. So I've been pushing that a lot through a lot of different avenues. I was on the cover of Paranormality magazine this month. Go check them out. They're helping support this petition. They published the book. And yeah, I'm doing some speaking events next month in October to try to get the word out about this home as well. So yeah, staying quite busy and got a couple of live investigations planned in the near future as well. So it's exciting stuff. It's spooky season, and so I'm getting spooky with it.
So how did this all begin? How did you hear? Can you tell us a little bit about the house? How did you hear about it? Why did it have such an immediate impact on you?
Yeah, so for those unfamiliar, the Bed Spear case occurred in 1974, and it occurred on an island just north of Jacksonville, Florida, Fort George Island. And it was about a month this story kind of took off and hit national popularity. But this family found a metal sphere on this island in Fort George. They brought it to their home on the same island. And a couple weeks later, the sun was playing a guitar near the sphere, and it started to vibrate and hum. It started to move on its own shortly after. And it would move with this kind of intelligence. It would follow people around the house. It could, like, navigate stairs and things like that. To the point where the family was, you know, amazed. And they soon told neighbors, and neighbors told friends, and friends told, quickly got to the local media, and that from there, the national media. And eventually, J. Allen Hynek got involved in the investigation, famed father of ufology. And even the Navy was hands-on in investigating this sphere. So it was this really interesting story, kind of took off. And it was just kind of a blip in Florida ufology. And so I was doing, last year I was doing a cross-country kind of paranormal road trip and doing a little, you know, travel into a couple different paranormal locations and doing a little, you know, pilgrimage to these sites. And so I wanted to go to this island and see this house where all this strange stuff had occurred. And on that first trip, I couldn't find the house. And I asked around, I asked the Park Service, which manages most of the properties on the island. They were confused by the question. They led me to a different house. And I kind of left kind of miffed, but I had a general sense that that island was strange. They're the canopy, the swamp, the all of it, the just a weird historical island. And there's a plantation on it. When you drive through it, you're driving through shell middens from the Native Americans who used to occupy the island. There's these stone ruins that used to be homes for slaves who used to work the plantation. It's really a drive through history. And so it has that, you know, almost gothic feel about it, the island itself. And so I went on this trip, did some crazy, weird investigations, and a lot of them ended up being around sphere-centered phenomenon. I went and did a mushroom experiment in Marfa, Texas with the Marfa lights, famous light phenomenon, these balls of light that appear out there and seem to move intelligently. And then on my way back, I had done some further research and found some satellite images and located exactly where the Betts house was. And so I did a little hiking. I crossed a little bit of a no trespassing barrier set up by the park. Because, you know, it's journalism, I like to think. bending the rules a little bit, but I had to go see this house. And when I saw
sometimes it, you got to do stuff like that. I mean, it's the paranormal. You got to bend the rules sometimes. It's
fuck a little bit. So I went and investigated this house just to go see it. And it was one of those locations that is very rare for me. I go to a lot of these places, and most of the time it's like, oh, cool, you know, old building, fun story, hang out. Good time, you know, maybe some spooky stuff happens on some technology and everyone gets spooked out and you have a good time. There's some locations there you go to and it has that palpable feeling of, oh no, this is bizarre, like something, this is odd. It's unusual. And part of that has to do with the house itself. It's this Tudor style stone tower for an entryway. It looks more like a castle than a home. And it sits atop Mount Cornelia, which is the highest point in Duval County in Jacksonville. I mean, it's not really a mountain, you know.
So it's a very old building, it sounds like.
Yeah, so it was built in the 30s. And that was one of the things that led me to pursue this case further, was that I discovered that there was kind of a second paranormal file on this home, other than the Betts sphere. And in the ghost hunting community, the home had become known as the Neff House. And it had all these haunting legends. And so the origin story of the house it's a pretty classical ghost story. So the house was designed by Mellon Greeley. And he was commissioned by, he's considered one of the best architects in Florida history, the Dean of Jacksonville Architects. Lots of his buildings are historic landmarks around the county. And he was a member at this Reebok Club, which is also on the island. And he designed it. It's this kind of colonial style, kind of keeping in theme with the plantation house, which is further down the island. And it has this grand lawns. And back in the 20s, this was like the hangout for Jacksonville's elite. It's where all, they had the Gatsby parties. There was a 9-hole golf course on the island. It was really the swanky hangout. And it was there where Greeley met a man named Nettleton Neff. And Neff was a railroad engineer from Chicago. Engineer executive. He had worked his way up to the executive position. And he had owned a bunch of properties around the U.S. and wanted to have a summer home there on Fort George Island. And he had purchased the land on this Mount Cornelia, which, again, it's more of a hill. It's like 49 feet high at the tallest point. But it is, it's this, you know, high point on the island and in the surrounding area. So it's a good plot of land. And Mellon Greeley was, you know, the most famous architect around. And so he came to him with this idea for a castle-looking house. And Greeley drew up the separate-looking blueprints, and they decided that was the one to go with. It kind of encapsulated his vision. But the Neff family never had a chance to move in. They were soon struck with tragedy. First, Nettleton's wife died in a fire at one of their Michigan properties. The newspapers called the fire mysterious. And so they, obviously, the family was grief-struck. But then the adult son, he disappeared while attending Harvard. They found him 2 weeks later hanging in an apple orchard. Again, it was ruled a suicide, but bizarre. And Nettleton Neff soon followed suit. He took his own life inside his office in Chicago. And so they had moved their boxes into this home, but the family themselves never moved in. And this was right at the same time the Great Depression hits. The house is complete right around 1932. So the family dies tragically, and the Great Depression hits. And it becomes this abandoned house, this castle sitting on the hill. The golf course gets abandoned. The island quickly becomes jungle again. And these legends start circulating around the house. It starts becoming the, like, kids start daring each other to go and you know, investigate this house because they're seeing shadow figures and light spheres and hearing strange noises coming from the halls of this home.
Oh, man, the shadow figures. They always show up. That's when you know you're in trouble.
You have your classical, all the classical ghost archetypes. And the island has had them before that. From the plantation era, there were ghost stories. And predating that, colonial era ghost stories, which I get into all of those in my book, deep into the historical details and the ghosts associated with the island. So the house sitting on the hill, like, it becomes literally the house on Haunted Hill. It's the local urban legend center. And it sits empty for near four decades before Jerry Betts buys it. The Betts family is the first and last family to live in the property as a residence. The park uses it for a short time after the Betts family sells it. The Park Service use it for some archaeologists who are staying on the island. They use it as residence for a short while, but for unknown reasons, it's abandoned and it starts to decay to the state it is at today. But that was one of those kind of aha moments. You know, it happens so often in the paranormal community where the ghost hunters and the UFO people aren't talking to each other. You know, it's quite a strange coincidence that this famous haunted house happened to be the center stage where this sphere phenomenon occurred. That was actually the reason Jerry Betts bought the house in the first place. She was a very, very interesting character, a historical woman in many a sense. She had a real estate company and a trucking company. Again, this is the 1970s, so a mother of six, very successful companies. And one day she's talking about financing this film project. And one of the other people says, well, there's this perfect location you could film it at. There's this big old spooky house on Fort George Island. And she goes out and sees the house and falls in love with it, buys it, adds on new wings, renovates it. And she moves into this big old spooky house with the reputation. And she herself experienced some of the ghostly phenomenon inside the house. There were they had a dinner party one night, and all of the guests heard this smashing, and they went into the kitchen, and the dishes had been smashed in the center of the floor, several of these fine china dishes. But they were inside of a locked cabinet, and the cabinet, the doors were still closed and they were still locked. So a classical poltergeist phenomenon. She would see the light spheres and hear the voices as well. But she was very rational about it. In an interview she gave, she was like, oh, well, the light spheres, that's probably phosphorus in the soil, you know, we're out here in the marsh. So it's probably just that.
Swamp gas.
The voices. Well, yeah, exactly. She was swamp gas. Very rational.
Swamp gas, ball lightning. It's always either one of the two, swamp gas or ball lightning. Yeah.
Well, she had that skeptical approach, and I think that's very interesting because later on, the sphere shows up at her house, and she's like, yeah, this is weird, and she goes to the Navy, and she goes to all these professionals trying to get answers to what this thing is, because she's a rational person. If she could write it off in a way she could, like the ghost phenomenon, she would, but there was no explanation for this sphere.
She sounds like a pretty brave lady.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And more than, you know, just paranormally brave. She actually ran for state Congress. And there was an article written at the time about her and a couple other women running for state Congress. And the headline was, "How will these women keep house if they're elected?" It gives you kind of an idea of the shit she was up against. And that kind of played into this sphere story to a very large extent, because at first she wanted to get answers. She first invited over one of these local radio personalities, this guy named Ron Kravitz. He ran the late show, the late night paranormal kind of a coast-to-coast show in Jacksonville at the time.
Oh, what? His name's Kravitz?
I think Kravitz, not Lenny Kravitz. I think it's Kravitz. I think I put that R in there by accident.
Oh, that's interesting, though, because this is like, you know, it's kind of like a lot of these podcasts you have nowadays, but this is an early precursor to the whole scene. That's right. Kind of interesting. I haven't heard of that show. I'll have to look that up if I can.
Yeah, I'm not sure if you can find recordings of it. I know he produced a sci-fi movie called Zat, this like cheesy like 60s 70s kind of alien invasion movie, but he was basically the local UFO buff, like he was the local expert, and he recalls going to the home and seeing the sphere act strange. He said when he went over, it was sitting on the center of the table, of this glass table, flat glass table. You know, the kids were playing. It was normal day. And when he was there, he was like, I want to take more pictures of the house because the house is weird. The light's really good. Let's go out back and let's take more pictures. And so Jerry is leading him out back through the sunroom there. And the ball rolls from the center of the table to the edge of the glass table and kind of dangles off the edge in this gravity-defying way. And then it, like, wobbles. And Ron says that it was as if it was saying, like, hey, don't forget me. It, like, had this kind of emotion about it, right? It was like, hey, if you're going outside, I want to go outside. Like a pet cat or a dog. And interestingly, the Betts family had a toy poodle that hated the sphere. It would freak out if it was held close to it. It would whine and whimper when it was near it. It did not like being near the sphere. But despite the fact that the dog didn't get along with it, the family had kind of grown an affinity towards it. It was kind of like a pet, you know? It was cute in a way.
Yeah, what's interesting about this is, you know, there's so many people out there are very skeptical, but this sounds like an ongoing, repeatable phenomena that that you could almost anticipate, which is very rare in this field. I find that very interesting about this story.
Oh yeah. Well, and that's, it's, I think, a crucial, again, nowadays we've taken some steps forward and recognized that the paranormal overall is much more interconnected than typically believed, right? We used to be of the opinion that, ghosts are ghosts, or, you know, spirits of dead people, aliens are from different planets, that's what's going on there. Bigfoot's some lost monkey man that we've just not discovered. And now in the age of the internet, and because of the great research by predecessors like your John Keels and your Jacques Vallée's, we can recognize that there is a high strangeness that pervades all of them. And we got into that in my first book and all the different theories we talked about on the Chaz of the Dead episode one. So go back and listen to that, folks.
Yeah, absolutely. I also find it interesting that Hynek was out there. I mean, that's another huge name for him to take interest. Oh, yeah. It must have been very, very notable.
Oh, yeah. So Ron Kravitz, while he saw the sphere act strange and was amazed by it, he didn't have any answers for Jerry. And so Jerry turned to other people, one being the Navy, and she drew up a contract with the Navy because she was a clever businesswoman. You know, she said, drew up a contract that said if it wasn't dangerous and it wasn't U.S. tech, that it had to be returned to her. And there's a story that, and again, the timeline here is a little wonky. So we're not really sure if it was the Navy who investigated it first. That's how I believe it occurred from the story I've heard. But the Navy and Hynek both ended up investigating. First, the Navy looks at it and they report to the family that the X-rays showed that there's some kind of internal mechanism, that there's these three internal spheres inside the bigger sphere. And the story goes that they're returning the sphere one day. They're driving the sphere back to her house. The guy who is in charge of liaisoning between the family hands it over. And he's like, yep, you got something weird there, Jerry. It's pretty bizarre. And they get a call at the house from the naval station. And it's this higher up. And he's calling for the guy who dropped off the ball. And he gets chewed out over the phone. Jerry can't hear exactly what's being said, but as the story's relayed from a friend of the family, she can tell that he's getting chewed out. And after he hangs up, he desperately pleads with her to get the sphere returned. And she's like, no, we signed this contract. You know, if you don't know what it is, then I'm going to take it to someone who does. Yeah, this isn't yours. This is something strange and we're going to figure this out. And so the Navy releases to the public a second explanation that says, oh, it's just a perfectly balanced metal sphere. And so if you tap it, it'll move on its own. Nothing to see here, you know, debunked.
Oh, that's pretty tricky explanation. That's very manipulative for them to put it out there that way. That's really tricky.
Yeah, but this is how a close friend of the family relayed this story. And the Navy, this is all in the public papers because this was the story. It was the start of the summer, and this was the sensational kind of news bit for the spring there. And in a few weeks, the newspapers would jump on with the total debunking, and we'll get to that in a moment. But this is when she's like, okay, well, the Navy doesn't know what's going on. And she had already been at this time contacted by dozens of UFO groups from all over the country because the story had gotten that big. And she settled on J. Allen Hynek, who was leading this panel that was put together by the National Enquirer. And it was this contest to like prove UFOs are real, win $10,000. But Jerry, successful businesswoman, she didn't give a shit about 10 grand. She was much more interested in the fact that this panel was stacked with people that today we know as famed, you know, figures in the paranormal. It wasn't just J. Allen Hynek. There was Harder, Leo Sprinkle. There was one other guy. there was a few other guys, but a couple of big name, you know, old heads in the paranormal. And all qualified, you know, academics. You know, this was long before Travel Channel TV shows dominated the paranormal. This was that start of it being taken legitimate. And for those who don't know, Hynek was the one of the researchers in the government's Project Blue Book. He was a professor of, I believe, astrophysics. And while Project Blue Book was set out to debunk ufology, he came away from it saying, well, no, there's clearly legitimate cases. And he wanted to dive into it in the public sphere. And was kind of the first serious academic to look at the subject. So a lot of the solid footing of ufology, which there's not too much of it, but the little bit of solid footing there is in ufology, much of it can be attributed to Hynek. So Hynek investigated the sphere, it seems to be actually three separate times. The first was at this National Enquirer panel. Terry and their adult son, who had originally found the sphere, and one of their other sons, they flew out to New Orleans with the sphere. And there's actually a video of Terry sitting there with the sphere talking about it. You can see the size of it. And it's interesting, in this video, you can see that the sphere, it's worn. It's been rolling around. It's got scratches and dings and things like that. It's, you know, it's not rough, but it's clearly not perfectly balanced, like the Navy said in their public release. Anyone with eyes can see that thing's not perfectly balanced because the surface isn't smooth enough to be perfectly balanced. There's, you know, damage to it. But he talks about the sphere, and shortly after this video, they hand the sphere over for it to be researched, and something strange happens. The panel gets this panicked phone call from Jacksonville, Florida, saying that the two boys need to return home immediately. There's some kind of emergency. And so Terry calls his mom, obviously he calls the home, but the call doesn't go through. And that wasn't too unusual because at this time, this late into the story, Jerry had been in the habit of leaving her phone off the hook just so it wouldn't ring all the time. People were calling nonstop 24 hours a day. Once the East Coast ufology people stopped calling her phone, you know, the West Coast ones would wake up and they'd start calling her. And then the UK people would wake up and start calling. It just would ring constantly. And so she would leave it off the hooks, you know, at times just to get some sleep. So panicked, you know, they quickly boarded this flight, flew back to Jacksonville, show up at the home, and Jerry Betts is like, what are you doing here? Where's the sphere? What did the panel find? And they're like, what about the emergency? There was some kind of emergency. And she was like, no, there's not. Go back. Get the sphere. What are you doing? She was pissed. And Terry went back, walked into the where they were investigating and at these labs, picked up the sphere and left before any of these tests could be conducted. Because the family felt that the National Enquirer had fucked with them, that they were like, oh shit, we're going to lose our 10 grand. We got to, you know, mess up this investigation. They thought something fishy was going on. But interestingly enough, this was the exact same kind of phenomenon John Keel experienced during the Mothman investigations. These phantom phone callers and these doppelgangers impersonating him and other investigators in the area, especially over the phone. So that was actually one of the details when I heard the story. Oh, that's kind of interesting. And Hynek and the Betts family wouldn't have known about this because Mothman Prophecies wasn't published until that year, but only a few months after the sphere case went down. But Hynek felt so bad about this. He thought the whole thing was a misunderstanding, that he actually flew out to Jacksonville and stayed at the home. And this is where another interesting element pops up. Because there's a story, again, coming from family members and close friends of the family, that Hynek was caught messing with the ball. He was fucking with it in some way. It literally, like, caught out in the middle of the night, messing with the sphere, and he didn't have any permission to do so.
He's like, I just gotta go fucking play with this thing.
Well, there's one version of the story says that he asked for permission, like, oh, can I keep the ball in my bedroom overnight to see if it does anything, you know? And Jerry said, yes, that's one version. But another version says that, no, he was literally had no permission. He was caught outright, like, fiddling with it. And it's even been told that he had, like, this doctor's bag with him and that he, like, swapped it out with a fake. And this theory was actually bolstered up by his son, who was doing rounds for the Project Blue Book TV show. He was doing that a few years ago and talking about, in one of these interviews, talking about growing up, you know, in a UFO household. And he mentioned that he would, him and his brother would kick around this metal sphere in their basement from a UFO case in Florida. And it was just kind of like a one-off mention, and he has no idea where that sphere ended up or anything like that, but it kind of bolstered this story up a little bit. Either way, by the end of this month, Jerry Betts was convinced that something had been done to the sphere, that someone had messed with it in some way. And she even got a second set of x-rays that showed that those three interior spheres, those interior mechanisms, one of them had been destroyed and been pulverized. She doesn't know if it was Hynek or if it was the Navy, but she felt that the sphere had been messed with or that it had been swapped out. She said she couldn't even be sure it was the same sphere anymore. But this had also lined up with the fact that she was tired of it. She was done with it. She was trying to run her businesses. She was a very busy woman. And her life had been taken over by this ridiculous sphere story. And so
it's starting to remind me of certain other stories. You know, like crop circle materials going missing, or you know, there's all kinds, or things about the Smithsonian hiding bones and things like that. It's almost like when these sort of things happen and people start viewing the paranormal world differently, suddenly this force swoops in, whether it's Men in Black or something completely different. And boy, at this point in the story you're telling, things are getting friggin' weird.
Oh, absolutely. And this is kind of the strange bit, because this is the part where the family, the firsthand witness, they cut off contact with the public. They drop it. The public at this point, the newspapers have written this debunking that the sphere is a piece from an industrial equipment. It's this like pulp gauge thing that they use in paper mills and water pumps. Nothing special. They must have been faking it or whatever. And at this point, Jerry was like, all right, we'll just roll with that. Like, they've debunked it. That means people will stop calling me. That means I can get back to running my businesses and parenting my children. People were literally showing up at the house and just knocking on the door and camping on their property without permission and shit. it literally became chaos. You know, the UFO community has not been known to be the sanest of communities, and so,
well, it's because it's a hard piece of evidence. It's something physical. It's something everybody is always craving, is some sort of physical proof that will just blow it all open, so we can undoubtedly say this is real. I mean, you and I know this stuff is real, but the general population just, you know, there's too much.
Right. And well, I still need that piece of proof too. Yeah. Like, I know it's real, like 99%. I still need the proof for that 1%. So I understand what kind of furor that kind of story can cause. It fucked up her businesses and shit. And so she, to this day, doesn't talk about the sphere. You can actually, she does have a website where you can buy some of her paintings. She's a good painter. She doesn't talk about the sphere. She's not interested in that. It's a blip in her life story, and it's not an important one, you know, as far as she's concerned. And very respectfully, you know, don't go bothering her about the story. there was a journalist who I worked with, Lindsay Kilbride. She does a great 5-episode documentary podcast called Oddball. And it's from the perspective of like, oh, was it a hoax? Was it real? It's like a very journalistic approach, not as opposed to my more paranormal centered approach. But it's great. And she managed to reach out to Jerry in a very respectful manner. And again, she reiterated that she wasn't interested in talking about the story or the sphere. So all respect to that. And again, fascinating woman and all dead to rights, all understandable that she's not interested in being part of the UFO community. But of course, to me, that shows how good of a witness she is, because that's always the grift. The fact that anyone's like, is it a hoax? It ruined this woman's life. Why would she hoax that? She had what at the time would be million-dollar industries that she was running. She had no financial or social incentive to fake a UFO. But the story didn't end there. And that was part of the second thing that kind of made me jump on this project and really want to look into it, because it continued actually very, very recently. As far as the public's concerned, 2019, when they released those Navy UFO videos, the now famous UFO clips everyone recognizes, right? The Tic Tac. That was filmed in 2004, and that one's been made famous by David Fravor. He went on Joe Rogan and all that shit. But then the other two were the gimbal, which is the kind of the most famous one. It's that black saucer, black and white saucer that kind of rotates. It looks very much like a UFO. And the GoFast, and both of those were filmed in 2015, and they were filmed by crews running training missions off the USS Roosevelt, a Nimitz-class nuclear aircraft carrier. What's never discussed in these videos has been huge amounts of debate. Are they deep fakes? Are they real? What's the government, you know, are they lying to us? Do they know what it is? It's the backing of all those Congress meetings, right? All the current UFO, you know, buzz kind of stems from these videos. They've really changed the public's perspective. But the USS Roosevelt was stationed outside of Mayport Naval Station, which is the naval station that lies just to the south of Fort George Island, the very same naval station that investigated this Betsphere. And that what brings us to the second video that was filmed that day. Surrounding this gimbal craft were a bunch of metal spheres. And the GoFast video shows one of these metal spheres traveling super fast right above the ocean. And it seems to be heading in the direction of the coast. And this is being filmed only a few miles from Fort George Island, where 40 years ago, the Navy not only investigated one of these metal spheres, they hands-on had one in a laboratory. And this has not been brought up in any of the discussion of these videos. You know, is it a weather balloon? They're still arguing about that. But everyone seemed to miss this detail. And so I turned my attention to Mayport Naval Station. And I discovered a couple of reports that even J. Allen Hynek at the time would have been unaware of. And it was that Mayport Naval Station has had a couple of close encounters with UFOs.
Buzzed by UFOs. That is interesting.
Yeah, right before the Betsphere even arrived, they had a situation where fighter jets were scrambled. This craft hovered over the station. The alarms were rung. They had the guards and watchmen were given the talk down. You don't tell anybody about this. You didn't see shit. You know, they got their classic military hush job. And only years later, were you know, hanging out with their buds, they were like, remember that time that big spherical light hovered over the station?
And it's funny how often it's the Navy that's telling people to shut their mouths. Like, you would think the Navy would be one of the more go-lucky, innocent branches of our military, but they seem to be involved in way too much of this type of stuff.
Oh, yeah. They're definitely taking the forward position on the subject. And it really, it does make sense from the defense perspective, because the true impossible physics that these crafts show, the physics that concerns the military, is that trans medium, the ability to go from water to air. That really fucks with the Navy. They're really pissed about that. they really want that. So if it is us in a secret project, they want to put pressure on whatever branch has it. Because the Navy, they're the oldest branch. They were fucking crazy over there. We kind of write them off, but they got their own shit going on. But this station in particular has had repeated history with these craft. Before the Bett Sphere showed up, then the Bett Sphere itself. Afterwards, there was another close encounter at the station. And then they just so happened to, in 2015, record this Sphere. It starts to seem pretty coincidental that they just so, oh, well, yeah, we just happen to have the cameras on and be recording in this area that we happen to know for a fact has a long history of these things showing up. It's, again, it's pretty bizarre. It's even sparked off one of my favorite theories, that the Sphere in the Go Fast video isn't flying towards the coast. It's actually flying towards the gimbal craft, and it's reuniting the craft, and that Sphere is the Bett Sphere, and that it was locked away at Mayport Naval Station for these 40 odd years. And then the gimbal craft comes back and it activates and breaks its way out of the lab.
Holy flies shit. Off to
the which, God, I hope that's true. That's cool as hell.
Yeah, that's badass. But, that's like a movie. It's activated. Right?
It's very movie-like. And so, yeah, this overarching picture, you know, the Bett Sphere was 1 month. But it's not, the Bett Sphere isn't the case. It's the Fort George Island window area, if you will. There's something going on at this location that is far beyond simply UFOs or ghosts. And it's something that, like a lot of these locations, Rendlesham Forest, Skinwalker Ranch, these hot zones, there's a military base right there, and it seems to be interacting with the phenomenon. And again, you know, no huge stunner there. The military's withholding information. But we know a little bit more, I think, now with this information and with this book, that the spheres in particular at this location, people are looking into. They are interested at a higher level. And yeah, when you talk about did the Navy steal the Sphere, that they are my most likely suspect on the list of who stole that Sphere. Perhaps they swapped it out and J. Allen Hynek swapped out the Navy's fake for another fake. It's just swap, 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 swap. Of course, there's the other possibility that the Sphere was mundane technology and that it kind of became a tulpa. It kind of became the centerpiece of the paranormal manifestations of the house, which happens in a lot of poltergeist cases where one object becomes, you know, possessed or becomes the center of the strange, you know, happenings.
Yeah, that would be kind of like what they call an egregore.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. All the, you know, people thinking the house is spooky and then, you know, people living in the house experiencing the spooky stuff. And yeah, the Sphere turns into a planchette to the house's Ouija board, right? This weird liminal object that has this mystery around it and sometimes makes an object move on its own. And so that's potentially true as well. It's, again, who knows? But something's going on, certainly beyond a family faking a thing. I'm 100% convinced that they had no, you know, there was zero motive, zero incentive. It, you know, only ended up harming them. Like most of these traumatic paranormal experiences when they go public. And this one's not even traumatic. No one got probed. You know, they it was kind of like, it reminds me more of the Iron Giant, really. If you've ever seen that terribly sad cartoon.
Oh yeah,
it's tragic. I don't know how they can show that to kids.
Well, like, back when back when this originally happened, I mean, people were still using rotary phones, and you know, smartphones were not yet, and drones had not really been invented yet. But as we're approaching the you know, as far as things have come now, we have things now that resemble what's being described here, I think, a little bit more. Like, we have the drone technology, we have nanotechnology. So I wonder if maybe we might get to a point where we kind of understand what's going on with it a little bit more. I mean, it for one thing, it would have to have some pretty small parts inside of it to allow it to work. And it almost sounds like it might have been robotic, like some type of artificial intelligence. Cool.
I'm so glad you said that. It's like we rehearsed this, because that was a beautifully smooth transition, which I just ruined. But yeah, no, it's funny you say that, because for this project, I used a device, the Ghost Code device, and it's built by a guy who says he's cracked the code behind these spheres. Now, buckle up. Yeah, because this theory's a little out there. And you know me, I love my out there theories.
If it's anything like the device that flies with the dead bodies of bees, then it must be pretty bad.
It's definitely up there with bee theory level craziness. This guy, Patrick Jackson, he's out of the UK, and you can have him on his show. He loves to talk about it. He has this theory. He calls it quantum paranormal theory. I call it ghost code theory. It's not too quantum. He kind of uses quantum like a comic book writer, you know? It's like radioactive. But his theory is that these spheres, these metal spheres, that they are a network of probes that, you know, are all over the earth, globally, everywhere, and that they occupy abandoned buildings, and that they enter a quantum state and turn invisible, and they can phase through walls and things like that. And basically all your poltergeist and ghostly activity is because of these quantum invisible spheres hiding out inside these abandoned buildings. And they use EVPs and, you know, shadow figures and things like that to try to scare humans away. Because when they're operating, they give off radiation, which can be dangerous to people. And that's why people get scratches and burns and get red eye irritation and illnesses when investigating the paranormal, is because the spheres are radioactive. And that's also why the spheres only turn themselves on between midnight and 3 a.m. That's when they're only active, because that's when most people are asleep. So he's got the witching hour. It's fun. It's a fun theory. It's definitely, if you're like a ghost hunter and you like UFOs or vice versa, it's one of these theories that it's, one, very fun. Two, yeah, there's some holes in it. I'm sure you're probably thinking some. I'm sure some have been shouted out in the chat. There's some problems with it. But it is a step forward, like we were talking about. It's one of these guys from a traditional ghost hunting background recognizing that there is a connection between UFOs and this other phenomenon. I think he's taken that connection a little too far, but it's an intriguing theory. And one of the interesting things, actually, back to tie it into bee theory, one of the interesting things that he shows as evidence of this theory is that he's got videos of UFO spheres, pretty decent quality videos filmed by other witnesses that do check out. And then he has videos of ghost orbs that are taken during paranormal investigations. And they're both moving in similar patterns. And it's very interesting, but the problem is, as a paranormal-based ghost hunter, paranormal investigator, that it's a bug, that the lights, the ghost orbs, 95% of them, if you're not seeing a luminous sphere, And you can tell this in videos if it's not casting shadows on other objects around it, then it's just a bug reflecting the camera light.
I've seen both, and most of them look pretty suspect, but I have seen ones that look like the only way that they could have been created was if they had really good special effects technology. Kind of like the movie Poltergeist, where and it's funny that in that movie Poltergeist, they have, I think it's closer to the beginning of the movie, they have a scene where these orbs are coming out of the room and they're luminescent. So it shows you, shows us how much of a history these orbs have in with the ghost hunting, haunting sort of world. Yeah.
And with all the paranormal phenomenon, when it comes to the tier list, because I don't go from the top down explanations, most ghost hunters or UFO guys, they think it's aliens or they think it's demons, and then they find evidence that supports that, idea. And that's ghost code theory is one of those as well. It cherry picks the pieces of evidence. The good cherry picked evidence there is, he's right, though. Those UFO spheres are moving just like those bugs. they are flying in similar patterns. And I do think that's an important thing to remember when we talk about the impossible physics of these craft. There are impossible physics for aeroplanes and birds, but a lot of the physics they display can be done by insects. So that was an interesting kind of side piece of information I gleaned from ghost code theory, for my own pet theory, for when I do like to do the top-down thing. But from the bottom-up approach, where you analyze these cases and you find the trends and you look for the overall source of the phenomenon, those light spheres are at the top of the list. They are so common in UFOs, ghosts, and even cryptids, Bigfoot creatures riding on top of light spheres, turning into light spheres. Here in Florida, not far from along the St. John's River, which is one of the corners of Fort George Island, there's all kinds of light sphere phenomenon up and down that river. And one of them is the Barden Booger, which is this classical Sasquatch. But before you see the Sasquatch, you always see this light sphere. And when you get closer, you see that it's a Sasquatch holding a lantern. And that's always been the legend. And interestingly, if you look at ghost legends of light spheres, most of the light spheres, the original legends, whether it's Marfa, Texas or Brown Mountain, there's one up in the Upper Peninsula in Michigan. The legend is that it's a ghost holding a lantern. Because you see this light sphere, and then at night, a lantern kind of has that circular glow about it, and then you get closer and you see something spooky. The light sphere definitely is a top tier piece of information or phenomenon.
Did anybody see those did anybody see those at Skinwalker Ranch? I can't remember.
Absolutely. Yeah, they were very common in Skinwalker Ranch. I think even the TV show might have caught some glimpses of some of the weird light phenomenon out there, though most of the stuff they do on that thing is pretty ridiculous. So it's hard to say. The second you get the real cheesy sound effects in there, you just kind of throw out your credibility with it. Because I find the Skinwalker case fascinating, but that TV show, man, I had the opportunity the other week to read the Montauk Project. I don't know if you've done an episode on that. It's a popular, weird time travel. It kind of connects to the Philadelphia experiment. It's this real popular, supposedly true theory. They based a lot of it, Stranger Things, off of this book. But supposedly the book's true. And I read it, and I came away 100% a disbeliever. the source material, I was like, wow, man, this is, it's like a 12-year-old wrote this. It's really bad. The things that you would elaborate about, the things you would write at length about, are just skimmed over. And then the things that are so mundane and non-important, are like written at length. It's just, it has horrible, creepy pasta-esque pacing. It's the whole thing's, it's fun. It's a good, cheesy, fun read, but it's not believable. And there's a lot of that around the paranormal phenomenon. And, you know, it's, you can't really hack on it because it's how all of us get invested in this, right? It's the stories. And it's the stories that really drive us to be interested in the subject. And when it comes to that tier list of what's at the very top, right above light spheres, is a spooky story. There's always some kind of legend associated with these locations. At Fort George Island, there were Native American, you know, sites that had mysticism about them. There were slave legends. There's Old Red Eyes, the slave who was killed by other slaves, who supposedly haunts the island. There's your classical Women in White. If you go to Mothman, Point Pleasant was cursed by Chief Cornstalk, this Native American chief. Again, your cliche Native American magic. In Pascagoula, those abductions, those two dudes who were abducted by these metallic-looking aliens hit by a purple light. It was investigated at length by the local police, and the police came away saying, we believe them. Dozens of books written on it. But it occurred at a portion of the river called Singing River, where this ghostly song is heard repeatedly on hundreds of years. The French governor of Louisiana was the first, one of the ones way back in the day, the very first one. He was the first guy to write about it, European to write about it. And he asked his native guides what the ghost song was. And they said that this tribe, they were going to war with this other tribe and they knew they were going to lose. And so instead of being enslaved, they drowned themselves in this river, chanting their death song. And that's their death song you can hear wafting off the river. Again, a spooky story has nothing to do with aliens, but every one of these locations where the phenomenon seems to be repeated has something like that way back. There's always an origin story. And from my research, that shows that there is a psychedelic mental aspect to this phenomenon. Mm. I think it's important to remind ourselves that storytelling and visualizing, if you've pictured anything I've talked about today in your mind's eye, you know, if you pictured the house, you pictured the sphere moving around, that is a psychedelic experience. It's a slight visualization. We're changing the chemical shift in your brain. And then it seems in those slight shifts, it's only that tiny shift that is necessary for this reality bending side effect. And that's been confirmed through my psychedelic experiences, where when I'm doing one on a location, yeah, some phenomenon occurs, but to be honest, it's not really that much more than if you're sober. But the days following, when you have that afterglow, that there's still a little bit in your system, then some weird shit starts to happen. Like there's some bizarre phenomenon that is truly strange. Things just pop up and disappear, and UFOs, in my case that I did with Ouija boards and mushrooms, I started to see UFOs in the days I wasn't actively using substances. It's only a minor shift required to kickstart the snowball at the top of the mountain, rolls into the giant one at the bottom.
Have you heard this? Yeah, this is supremely interesting, of course, but have you heard the idea that maybe this stuff is going on around us all the time, and when we take psychedelics, we're just kind of cleansing our perception and allowing ourselves to see kind of what we normally would probably see if we weren't so brainwashed or we didn't have these spells on us or whatever the heck is going on?
Yeah, I definitely think that's part of the equation. But I think that kind of can get mucked up because there is a cultural aspect to the visionary experience, and that applies to UFOs and psychedelic experiences. That it's a combination of nature and nurture, because where you grow up, how you're raised, your education, your cultural beliefs are going to affect not only your interactions with psychedelics, but your interactions with the paranormal. And there's a case that I'm hoping to investigate at length in Africa, hopefully next year, which is a prime example of this. Again, centered around one of these light spheres. And in colonial times, these light spheres were ghosts. They would turn into ghostly white women and they'd be, you know, your classical ghosts. Modern times in the more urban areas, and this is in Namibia in southern Africa, people see these light spheres and they're associated with UFOs. There's cattle mutilations. They steal water, which is a common thing in UFO cases, especially in Latin America and Africa. and Australia, oddly enough, the Minmin lights out there, light spheres are known to steal water. But there's a region around the border with Africa, with South Africa, and these two riverbeds and kind of the swath of region in between, in the desert, not really much colonialization in this area. They see these light spheres, and when the sphere gets close, they don't see a UFO or a ghost. It is a flying snake with this giant glowing light on its head.
That's crazy.
Well, the details that's like of something the snake from the Bible. Well, the details are even crazier because the snake has this smoke coming out of its nose. It's almost like a dragon, but it shows that it has this intense heat about it, right? And yeah. Again, same thing that occurs in UFOs. And the snake leaves scorch marks over the locations when it flies close to the ground. It leaves these, it will burn bushes and things like that. Again, similar to UFOs. But the strangest detail is that the snake has been blamed for a large swath of series of cattle mutilations in the area. It leaves these perfectly circular holes and drains the blood entirely out of sheep.
Okay, so there's man, this is fascinating. There's like a reptilian element and something that's mm-hmm. almost like angelic about them and vampiric too. Like there, I have mm-hmm. dots connecting. This is crazy.
Well, it's very similar to not only the UFO cattle mutilations, but chupacabra and other cryptid attacks, supposedly in the Americas and around the globe, where the blood's drained these perfectly round holes. And again, the snake has that extra detail of leaving scorch marks and cauterized wounds, which lines up exactly with the UFO cattle mutilations that occur here in the US and UK and globally. So, again, on a total other flip side, there's this fascinating study that was done in Namibia where this group of people, this is going to sound like a hard turn, but stick with me. It was done by anthropologists, and they were going to one of these interior tribes, the Kalahari Bush people that live in this arid, semi-arid, desertish region. And they were doing this eye test, and they were shown two panels, 9 circles on each panel. The first one, all 9 of them, or 8 of them were green, 1 of them was turquoise. Very clearly turquoise to you and I, turquoise. Clearly that's the turquoise one. Easy peasy. This, though, stumped the Kalahari Bushmen. They were like, maybe it's that one. Maybe it's that one. I can't really tell. Maybe that's the one that's different. The second panel, though, was 9 circles of green. And they are green. They look exactly the same shade of green to me, to everyone I've asked, because the second I read this, I asked everyone to, hey, look at these circles. Which one's which? Just to try it out. All of them are green. One of them is one shade different green. If you're like on your, Photoshop doing the color thing and you tick it up one, like 0.1 on the thing, that's how different it is green. All of the Kalahari Bush people, that one's different. That's the different one. That one's the different one. 100% success rate. They can pick out that one. And this is something, the whole nature of color and how people visualize things is this really bizarre puzzle. There's a whole side of research into how the color blue didn't exist prior to like the discovery of indigo, the dye. writings from the ancient Greeks never call the sky blue. It's the sky's always gray. The sea's always wine colored. There's no descriptions of blue until after this certain point in history. Really interesting. And in China, they have this whole, it's way too complex for me to understand, but it's this thing called Hunan purple. And it's like, it's the seventh color in the color wheel. And it's like disappeared. And we like physically can't see it anymore. And it's this whole, there's like quantum scientists trying to figure out where the, how the color disappeared from our vision. whole weird thing that I'm so totally not qualified to explain. So I'm going to stop there. But it gets, again, it's that scientific proof. The scientific basis of what's occurring with paranormal phenomenon. We are, you know, there's this notion from Valet and some of the great researchers that it's a trickster wearing many masks, but we are the costume designer. The trickster is not throwing on the masks. It's the masks are appearing because of us. We're perceiving these entities in a certain way. And that perception somehow is key to their physical existence in this reality. I don't know exactly how. Once I figure it out, the exact dose of mushrooms or whatever it is, I'll be back to share it with you.
Yeah. You know, one thing that's refreshing about you, Chaz, is number one, you take a very objective approach to this stuff. I see so many people out there in the paranormal, like UFO world, supernatural world, where, you know, like you said, they want it to be demonic, or they want it to be alien, or they want it to be psychic phenomena, or they want it to be this or that. But that's something we all kind of want, because we want a simple explanation that we can understand. If we keep being told that it's just all so complicated and mysterious that we will never know, I think that's frightening to a lot of people out there. It's more comforting if I can draw this like grand reptilian conspiracy and explain it all. But that's not really reality either. This stuff kind of goes into that psychedelic world again when you start to enter a territory that's just, we can't even grasp it yet. And the stuff about the colors, I think that really highlights it well, because that's exactly what's going on. It's something to do with consciousness and the raising of consciousness. And interesting enough, that's what a lot of these prophets from the past have kind of gotten at, you know, with a lot of their words.
Yeah. I mean, that is the root of a lot of the esoteric occult knowledge out there is, and, you know, it's even in the lazy ones, like The Secret, you know, manifest your own reality. And obviously it doesn't work as a cliche as that, you know, that, right? I can't just think really hard about a Lamborghini and then wake up, there'll be a Lamborghini there. That would be awesome. But clearly it doesn't work like that.
Oh yeah, I'm still waiting for my cheerleader squad, believe me. They still have not shown up. I'm trying to manifest them, but I'm still here alone. Eventually, in this room.
Keep working on it. You'll get a Tulpa cheerleader squad, and that's good, right?
As long as they're Seahawks cheerleaders, I'm good.
But yeah, I tend to call it, I like to call it the 11% rule. And this is, I think it comes from, I believe it comes from some of the random number generator ESP tests. And basically the root of it is you can alter a random number generator, but like to the best on your best day, about 11% more than chance. Right. And so if I'm thinking even really, really hard, and the conditions are right, and again, we don't know what those conditions exactly are, but it's about 11% more likely to be even than it is odd.
I think that's a pretty considerable number. I mean, 11.
It's a considerable number. And again, this is testable in the lab, but here's the problem, is that when the tests were set up by skeptical scientists who were going out specifically to debunk it, the people who were thinking even, they were ending up getting odd numbers, 11% more than chance. It had a nocebo, a negative mental effect, where it suddenly affected it differently. And this has been the problem that has kind of stopped ESP research, because we've all heard the stories about like the kids in China and like, you know, even here with like remote viewers and things like that. And Jeffrey Mishlove, he's a PhD out of Stanford. He his Encyclopedia of Consciousness is a must read addition to a cult library. But he gets into this idea of, he goes through all of these successful tests that show ESP is real to an extent. But the problem is, it's like a computer running a test on a computer. It doesn't understand. It's impossible to test something when we're using our ESP constantly. We don't understand the mechanism of it. So my ESP is fucking with your ESP, which is fucking with, you know, all of it is clashing and melding. And so it's really impossible to take that step out and research it. It's the same problem they have in quantum mechanics with the particle research. We know that particles don't exist unless they're observed. Well, that's a problem because we're observers. So how can we move forward and test something without fucking up the experiment? And we still haven't found that answer. We're kind of hit a wall.
And this is another problem with the manifest your reality, create your own reality, is if I want things one way and Chaz wants things an opposite way, like what happens there? Because we're both inflicting our will upon the situation. That's why it can't really work unless you're the only real spirited being in the universe or you're God. In order for other people to exist, you have to kind of accept that you can't totally be the master of your own reality.
Right. And that concept kind of gets into the idea of biocentrism, which is, I think, a good theory as a framework of understanding these concepts. But the idea that, you know, the brain is the generator of reality. It's kind of the computer point. Our consciousness, it's the receiver of consciousness and the generator of reality. It's the internal quantum computer. And again, the evidence is kind of lining up with that theory. And so it takes those ideas of, you know, does a tree fall in a forest? If a tree falls in a forest, does it make a sound? Well, the answer would be yes, because there's bugs, there's birds, there's, you know, a squirrel lived in that tree and now he's homeless. Like, there's clearly things experiencing that reality. But if a million miles away on a dead planet in an unobserved solar system and a stone pillar falls down in the vacuum of space, it doesn't make a sound. There's no vibrations. There's no eardrums being vibrated. There's no sound. So it isn't experienced. And from there, again, I'm a paranormal investigator, so I'm going to breeze over this without getting into details because I'm not qualified. But it gets into the idea of, you know, dark matter being that unobserved bits of reality. It doesn't materialize until someone's looking at it. And again, what does that mean when we're on a planet with 8 billion lookers? And how do we test something like that if we're all lookers? It's really kind of an impossible puzzle. And that is where we're unfortunately at with a lot of the paranormal stuff. Though I do believe the paranormal, observing these outliers of reality, these glitches in the matrix, if you will, is the best route forward as to understanding how all of that operates. Because clearly there's these outside entities. There's these other entities that can manifest. They're intelligent in some way. They have their own motives. They're doing their own shit. Doesn't involve us to an extent, because clearly they manifest in our reality. So it does involve us to a portion.
People get abducted. This whole phenomena, what you're explaining right now, this goes back into ancient times with the gods. It's like, okay, all these different people have had experiences with these entities, even in entirely different cultures, and somehow they still overlap. It makes you wonder. Some people come at it from the perspective of, this is all consciousness. This is all something that's going inside of me, and somehow I'm hallucinating it, and we're able to kind of repeat the pattern somehow. And then there's the other school of thought where it's actually something eternal, external of us. And just like you're saying, these entities or these gods or these demons, angels, the list goes on and on to describe them. Somehow they're able to, they're like a consciousness that's in the environment or in another dimension or something like that.
Well, and I don't even, again, from my bottom up approach, I don't even like to give them the label of consciousness. I prefer to call them disincarnate information, because there's definitely the majority of people interacting with unseen entities. Those entities are full of shit. They're not telling them valuable information. I mean, go outside and look at some people, and you'll see some people hearing voices that are leading them astray.
That's not a good point. Yes.
It's not necessarily valuable information. How many times does a preacher get told by God the date of the end of the world, and we're all still fucking sitting here? So again, this information exists disincarnately. It's not sitting inside the banks of a computer. It's not sitting inside our heads, consciously at least. It sits somewhere in that subconscious neural network shared between human beings, because we can hear it. Multiple people in a room in a seance can hear a voice tell some information that no one knows in that room, and then they go later on and they check it, and it is true. It does happen where that information is valid. And it does seem that interactions with the phenomenon, that this information will merge together and form a thing that seems conscious, that interacts in a intelligent manner. But again, if we consider experiments like the Philip experiment and the others done to replicate that with, you know, again, the ideas of tulpas and egregores, there's a good amount of evidence that that might just be our 11%, you know, forcing that disincarnate information into a shell to fit our beliefs, to fit our reality tunnel. And then once it's high from Europe, and once it's from fits that tunnel, it takes that physical manifestation. It becomes that demon or that Bigfoot or that alien or whatever it is you believe. I think a lot of the modern skinwalker stuff people see comes from not having a cultural reference point, right? Because we have the legend of the skinwalkers from, hundreds of years, centuries of mythology behind them. And they are usually shaman with these shape-shifting abilities. There's legends of cannibalism involved and sacrifice and stuff like that. But the modern, like, internet skinwalker is that creepy half deer, half humanoid, anamorphic, decaying, bizarre creature, right?
Yeah.
And that seems to be what people are seeing in the woods and calling a skinwalker nowadays. I believe that one comes from having no frame of reference, from not being brought up religiously, from believing in like a science materialist background. So when you see something in the woods that is outside of your understandable reality, your brain does the best it can. So it's like, oh, it's some kind of animal. It gives it that animal-like appearance. Well, it's not an animal, so we can't make it look exactly like an animal, so it gives it that weird shape. And, well, we don't know what it is, so it's probably dangerous. We better make sure the brain, it looks scary. Make it look creepy and scary. And so that's the brain's last minute filter. You throw it on and you get these really bizarre looking anamorphic half animal creatures coming at you.
And to take it a step further, a lot of times when there's like an ongoing phenomena or a cultural phenomena, you know, however you want to label it, it eventually it arrives on screen. Like somebody makes a movie about it, or makes a movie that's similar to the actual events, which really makes you wonder. It's like, okay, here's this phenomena that's playing out, and then it becomes a movie and goes into the fantasy realm, yet it's something that's real is being reinforced into the minds of the viewers in the collective.
Right. Yeah, it feeds the tulpa. And it just gets bigger and bigger. And I think Slender Man has become kind of the example case for that, where even to this day, people still are seeing Slender Man, you know, and it's kind of become a tulpa to some aspect. It definitely became one when, you know, true crime history was made by some crazy girls stabbing each other over it. And yeah, and again, I was a kid during that time period too. And I, you know, was staying up late and reading spooky stories on the internet, waking up at 5 a.m. to go to school, and I would see Slender Man peeking out from behind the trees and shit because I'm tired and delusional. And these things, again, it becomes part of your reality. It becomes part of your perception, and then you'll start to perceive it. It's when your perceptions and a person's perceptions spreads and it becomes reality for multiple groups of people. Those are when the truly bizarre paranormal cases are, right? It's the cases of implants. It's the cases of multiple witnesses where even in the more mundane things like Bigfoot footprints, there's a physical impact to these things. You know, science labels these all as, oh, they're just in your head hallucinations. You know, that's it. And that seems to be it partially. There absolutely is a modicum of evidence that supports that. And again, the psychedelic experience backs that up. You can take substances, alter your brain chemistry, and see and interact with things that seem to be disincarnate information. But there's still a whole swath of physical impacts that these experiences leave behind, that these entities, these disincarnate informations, have a physical impact. And they seem to have, at least the UFO phenomenon in particular, seems to have an understanding of those mechanisms. They seem to be able to navigate our reality in a way that, again, is beyond us. It's beyond our 11% understanding.
And it makes you wonder, because so many of these elite, super rich people, you know, they're into stuff like magic and stuff like that. It makes you wonder if the reality that all us poor folk are told is just one giant egregore, one giant tulpa.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's definitely the case. I think that, you know, the internet's kind of pulled the blanket of illusion out of the idea of like history and stuff like that being simply, oh yeah, that's what happened and that's what it is. And again, there is a true, like, certainly real things happened. You know, the Egyptians were real. Like, history's not fake, though some people believe it, and there are some weird things about it. I definitely think it goes back a lot further than we're told, because there's a lot of good evidence for it. But what I mean is that our realities and our understandings, it isn't a common thing. It's not a shared experience. We all have individual reality tunnels, as Robert Anton Wilson called them. And some of them meld and some of them mesh and some of them don't. But the internet showed us one thing, is that everyone's reality is a little bit different. And that's the great reveal that's been shown to us. And unfortunately, instead of that making us more empathetic, a lot of people have chosen to go a different route, boosted by some algorithms and shit. But again, the occult knowledge, that kind of idea, that also the internet has kind of pulled the veil out on, because the secret is that you can take substances and talk to entities. That's it. That's the big secret. That's what Hillary Clinton is doing with her adrenochrome, or whatever the actual drug she likes to take with her weird friends are. And they might not even be doing drugs. Most of ceremonial magicians and shit don't do drugs. They just do rituals and meditations. It's the same shit as going to the church and praying. It's just a different system of magic. Christianity, all those Abrahamic religions use the same concepts, that manifestation, praying, altering your consciousness, doing rituals. You know, some of us just like to use magic mushrooms when we do it. It makes the whole thing more fun.
Well, that, you'd have to be really ballsy to do mushrooms and stuff like that, like in a haunted house or with an Ouija board. I can't say I've ever really worked up to the courage to do that. It's hard enough for me just to take the substance, but to actually, you know, the closest thing I've probably done is like do some real experimentation in front of a mirror. Because when you're on psychedelics and you look in a mirror, you see some crazy ass shit.
That one's bad for.
It's bad for your self-esteem.
Never to do mirrors. Nope, I don't do mirrors when I'm tripping. That one's bad.
There was a few times where I swore like I could shapeshift. Like I could look like the Pillsbury Doughboy.
Yeah. Well, start doing it.
Or I could look like a lizard.
Well, yeah, and that was something again. I think we talked about on the first episode that. All of the similarities between the psychedelic experience and the paranormal experience, all the time bending, all the reality space bending shit, it lines up with psychedelics and a lot of those psychedelic experience. I mean, there's dozens of trip reports that if you were to take out the psychedelic aspect, it would be phenomenal, you know, paranormal stories.
And you're right, it doesn't necessarily have to be a chemical. Like music is one of the main ones, sound,
exactly.
Like these Gregorian chants and stuff that you hear in church, mm-hmm. or certain music produced by artists that are supposedly satanic or whatever. Mm-hmm. Like you really have to wonder what's going on with the music.
Oh, and the military knows that one too, with like the Havana syndrome and stuff. The global military community, they've totally seized sound as a way to manipulate consciousness and fuck with people. There's a really crazy book. I can never remember the name of it, but it's about this like lab that was supposedly working on these crazy sound weapons. And this like cul-de-sac neighborhood next door that had all of this crazy, absolutely insane paranormal stuff going on. And like there were some soldiers who lived there and they like stole a tank one day and took it for a joyride. Like people were acting insane. One woman, the story that stuck out most in my head, God damn, I wish I could remember this book. It was she woke up one day and she's just walking around her house. Everything's normal day. And she looks out and one of the windows of her house, the view is different. The window on the other wall looks out to the normal neighborhood, normal cul-de-sac. But this window is like looking out to like a coastal like city scene. It's like totally different. She opens the door and looks outside. Everything's normal. Closes the door, comes back inside. And this thing is still fucked up. And she ended up having like a really weird migraine. And I think maybe her nose started bleeding or something like that. And like passed out and then woke up and the thing was back to normal. But that was one example of just all of the weird stuff occurring in this neighborhood. And it was right next to one of these labs, the sound acoustics lab that has this really weird military contract. So again, yeah, it's anything. Again, stories, I think, are one we take for granted now, because if you look back, who were the storytellers of native tribes? It was the shamans. The same people using this, entrusted with psychedelic substances, were also entrusted with storytelling, because there was a recognition there that this is mind altering. This is, you know, it was much more of a science, shamanism, than we give it credit for. And, you know, we can still see that in the pieces that remain. Ayahuasca being the most famous one, where again, that's two plants in an Amazon rainforest of the most amount of plants that they combine to cancel each other out to make this brew that's non-lethal. It's still pretty toxic. It makes you shit and puke, but it's non-lethal. And when they asked the shamans, how do you have, well, the plants told us, that's how we figured it out. We asked them and they said, oh yeah, use me and me. That's how we figured it out. And, you know, European scientists still say, oh, it must have been trial and error. And someone's done the math on the amount of trial and error and, like, dead people it would cause to figure out how to do that combination. And it's ridiculous. It's just that's clearly not how that happened. There's something else going on. There is a knowledge. It was a science. It wasn't just, you know, tripping on strange substances. It was interacting with nature, interacting with this disincarnate information and pulling tangible information from it. And again, it was the same process with storytelling. They were entrusted with the spreading this information and this knowledge through, again, a psychedelic experience and that oral tradition.
Yeah, you know, one myth that comes to mind is Rumpelstiltskin. I mean, that character is just weird. Like, he's this little goblin elf dude, and somehow he knows how to spin yarn into gold. Like, he knows some kind of alchemical magic or something. And he's not only coming from another dimension, but he's got this crazy skill of making gold, you know, which is very precious, precious to all the different societies throughout history. And another one that comes to mind is, you know, circling back to the spear, the movie Phantasm. I mean, you know, those balls, those metallic balls that are just like flying around. I think they kind of buzz or whistle, you know, which might kind of get into the sound thing again. And that movie is very cool. Like, there's a, I hope I'm not spoiling it for anybody, but there's a part where they kind of find out where all the weirdness is coming from. And it's like coming from another dimension. And the, and there's this technology that allows these spears to levitate. And it's kind of bridging that gap between like a paranormal sort of scary movie and science fiction, which is probably one of my favorites. You know, when you can actually take something paranormal and either explain it or create some kind of story about it scientifically.
Well, and that's something that is, I think, really important in the field nowadays. And this was really, I think, a great book everyone should read. It's not about the paranormal, but it's really, I think, important reading for understanding the paranormal, and not just paranormal, but science, religion, and these other concepts of how we understand reality. And it's from Dr. Raymond Moody, who's the guy who termed NDE. He's a near-death researcher. But this book has nothing to do with that stuff. Well, it kind of does. But it's called Making Sense of Nonsense, and or Theory of Nonsense. And it's basically about the logical understanding of information that doesn't make sense. And it's not, we kind of do this thing negatively, especially in English, where we quote nonsense with fake, not real. Oh, it's nonsense, right? That's a common dismissal. And even I do it. I probably did it once during this episode. It's just common language. But nonsense in itself is a very valuable piece of it, logical information to have in your mind, because it's information that's not true or false. It just doesn't make any sense. And we use nonsense all the time to understand our reality. Obviously, we use it in religion. There's a bunch of examples, and I won't name a specific one as not to offend anyone. But think of the religion you aren't, and think of one of their nonsense beliefs. You can do it. But we also use it in science. The Big Bang Theory. Nothingness exploded into everythingness. That sentence is nonsense. It doesn't make any sense. Nothing can't be everything. It's a contradiction. It's something Dr. Seuss would write in a book. It's not a real logical sentence. Does that mean it's not true? No. Does it mean it's false? No. It just doesn't make sense. And that is kind of where we're at with a lot of the paranormal, is we're sitting in a field and it doesn't make sense. We've for centuries tried the biblical shit of it's demons, and it doesn't make sense. It's clearly not the answer. Something else is going on. We can all admit it. That you have, something's going on here, and it's not simply the enemies of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ.
It's Florida. Florida is just weird. Fun.
Go ahead. Sorry.
I was saying it's got to have something to do with Florida, because so much weird crap comes from Florida. Like, there's radio shows that just talk about Florida all the time, because there's so much weird stuff.
I actually have a knowledge nugget to drop on you. So the reason there's so many Florida man stories and things like that is Florida has a ridiculous law. We have lots of them, but this one is called the Sunshine State Law. And anyways, it means it's basically the second you get arrested, all police reports are public record. So the second you get arrested, before your trial, before anything happens, that can be written about in the newspaper. So every newspaper in Florida literally has a guy whose job is to just every day wake up and go through the police reports and find the wackiest story he can and publish it because it gets clicks on the internet. And all other states, you know, you're supposed to have a fair trial. So all others, I think like 48 states do not have that law because it fucks with your trial. You know, you go to trial, the jury hears that you were the dude who threw an alligator into a Wendy's drive-through window. So they're going to think you're guilty immediately, which is a true story that did happen.
Oh my God.
And that guy probably is guilty. I saw the video, but my point is it's not the greatest law, and that's why you get the craziest stories from Florida.
Well, speaking of law,
broken.
I did want to, if I have this correct, you want the house to become a historical landmark. Is that the idea?
Oh yeah, absolutely. And so I started a change.org petition to get the house recognized as a landmark. So I did end up investigating inside the house illegally a couple times. It's journalism though, so I'll stand by that. You're allowed to do it. First Amendment, all that jazz. It's on public land, so it's owned by the state, and I pay my taxes for the most part, so it's, yeah, I'm allowed to go there. That's how I feel about it. So it's owned not by the state. Fort George Island is part of this Timucua Cultural Reserve, and so Kingsley Plantation, which is on the island, the Rebalt Club, which we discussed, and a bunch of other locations around this area are part of the National Park Service and the state parks. And the house falls under their jurisdiction. And unfortunately, through my research and contacts and calling around, no one seems to know exactly whose jurisdiction the house is under. It's kind of a clusterfuck of bureaucracy. I was eventually given an email address to Tallahassee, the state capital, and they never got back to me. So the house is just sitting there and it's decaying. The portion that Jerry Betts added to it has already collapsed. It's in rough shape. And investigating it was, we tried several times to get in there legally with permission, and they wouldn't let us because the house is in a rough state. So anything we can do to get it recognized as a landmark, get it included as part of the park, and hopefully eventually get it renovated. It would be a great space for a museum. Whether or not it's about UFOs and ghosts, you know, it was built by a famous architect. It sits on the highest point in the county, a hill that's partially shell-midden, partially native settlements. It's really a historical location. And it's a castle. We have so few castles in Florida. In the U.S., period. We got to preserve these crazy structures when we can. You can see a picture of it.
Yeah, I was about to ask you about the book and saw it behind you like that. There we go. Yeah, okay.
That's the tower there. That's peeking through the woods.
That's a beautiful cover.
Yeah. Yeah, a photo taken by my lovely girlfriend, Kim, and the art done by Paranormality magazine artist Sam Sheeran. So go support them. They published it and did all the art and are helping with this promo and getting the petition out there. Because we really want this building to be preserved, not only so we can do paranormal stuff in it in the future, but because it's history, you know, it's a piece of information we all should appreciate. And it's apolitical. You know, no one needs to tear this down. It's not a symbol of oppression or anything like this. It's a fascinating piece of history, whether it's the architecture. It's 21 rooms, 7 levels. So it's got a basement and 3 stories. But there's all kinds of step ups and step downs. There's rooms in the middle of the wall, 6 feet up with no stairs. It's kind of like a miniature Winchester house in a lot of the aspects on the inside. It's really bizarre. And it's something that really should be appreciated by people into the future. I consider myself lucky to have had the chance to be in there and try out some weird paranormal stuff. But I think most importantly, it's a thing that needs to be saved. So if you like the stories I was telling today, you want to hear more, you want to hear more ghosts, more UFOs from that area, please pick up the book, A Place Between Time and Space, a true story about ghosts, UFOs, and Florida's strangest home. But if any of this was even remotely interesting, if you like paranormal, if you like the history, please, please go sign the petition. That's change.org, Save the Betts House. It's a piece of history that we all deserve to get to enjoy, and it should be saved. So thank you. That's it.
All right. Chaz, it is getting closer and closer to October. Are you planning anything fun for Halloween?
Oh yeah. So I've got a couple, of live investigations I've got lined up. I'll be streaming those on my Instagram and my TikTok. So that's where the kids are at these days. I'll also be doing a couple speaking events. You can see me in Tallahassee on the 22nd at the North Florida Paracon. I'll be talking about the Betts House and the Sphere. I'll also be in Logan, West Virginia the week before that, the 18th in Logan, West Virginia, signing books at the convention there, which name I am forgetting, Appalachia Paracon, something like that. And I have a couple other events to be announced. So for all that information, go follow me at Chaz of the Dead on all the social media outlet platform thingies. And to follow my work, my articles, podcast appearances, to my books, all that stuff, you can find me at chazofthedead.com. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. Yeah, Chaz, always good talking to you, especially around this spookier time of year. And of course, as always, we'd like to touch bases with you again in the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Hopefully I'll have a fun adventure in Namibia to come talk about in the near future.
All right. Until then, my friend, you have a good day.
Peace out.
And there you have it. That was Chaz of the Dead. Man, the way that that guy's brain works is fascinating. incredibly intelligent individual, loves to deep dive, loves to have those fascinating conversations. Definitely always good to have him on. As you know, this is when we usually take a little break. I'm going to go use the bathroom, of course, and freshen up a little bit, maybe use the bidet, and I will be back soon.
that chip was.
That could be here.
We are knives!
And welcome back to the End of Days. I am your host, Daniel, broadcasting to you in THX. Not really, but that would be amazing, wouldn't it? If I was using that Star Wars technology. Ooh. Oh my God, you guys. Was that fun or was that fun? My God, Chaz of the Dead. He says, thanks again for having me on. A blast as always. You know, I appreciate that. I hear that a lot from guests that come on the show. They tell me how much fun they had. That alone makes it still worth it. I have so much fun doing this, especially when you get into those deep conversations and your mind becomes blown, which brings us to, I'm going to use my can of LaCroix as a musical instrument. Mind blowing. Ooh, making a mess. These are really good. Mind blowing, mind blowing. Oh, you're blowing my mind, man. You're blowing my mind. This is the mind blowing moment of the day. I gotta say, it's the snakes, the flying snakes. The flying snakes with smoke coming out of their nostrils, leaving the burn marks on the ground. Like I was saying earlier, that sounds very biblical. It sounds like, The seraphim, I think they're called, like when the Hebrews were out there in the desert and they're fighting those other tribes, and all of a sudden these winged snakes would come along and start blowing shit up. Or, you know, when they make the Moses, he makes the bronze idol or whatever it is of a snake, and it keeps the other snakes from biting the Hebrews. It still reminds me of that stuff. Even the stuff about them biting and like leaving burn marks, fascinating. What are these flying snakes? What are these winged wonders? Could they be dragons? Could they be something far different? I love that stuff. I love when the dots connect. That's got to be my favorite. I love when the dots connect. A lot to talk about. So I was, when we were on our break, you know, I was complaining about the Mariners game when the show came on. And the Mariners were losing. I checked the score during the break, and I see that somehow a miracle happened, and they actually won. They beat Atlanta. They beat the Braves. Oh, my God. It's a September fall miracle. Everybody's happy. I hear the people of the greater Seattle area. I hear them rejoicing outside. I hear the cheers. I hear the trumpets going off. This is going to be our season. We're going all the way to the World Series. I can feel it. We've never had a team like this. Not since the days of Ken Griffey Jr. and Edgar Martinez and Alex Rodriguez, et cetera, et cetera. But I know, Daniel, we don't give a crap about Seattle sports. We don't give a crap about sports in general. Please stop talking about sports. I get it. And I will. But I'm just very excited. I'm enthusiastic. And I want the team to do good. I want Julio to do good. Because he's such a great young man. And he's already becoming a hero. Everything that Russell Wilson was and we lost, I'm seeing in this young man, Julio Rodriguez, the new king and lord of Seattle. So, some interesting things happened out in the fight world or the pro wrestling world, the fight sport world. I don't know if you really can group pro wrestling in with MMA as a fight sport, because obviously pro wrestling is scripted and UFC supposedly isn't, even though we know some of those fights probably are. But apparently there was a huge fight backstage at AEW, started by some individuals that were unhappy about some things being said, and it was very unprofessional. Fists were flying. People are being suspended. And ironically, the same thing, not long afterwards, you know, a week or so, maybe a week and a half, there's a fight backstage at a UFC event. And I'm wondering, are they doing this on purpose? Are they just trying to grab attention? Is it real or is it fake? You can never tell in the world of fight sports and pro wrestling. You never know what's real or fake. I mean, the people that have been keeping an eye on it for a while, they probably have developed some kind of instinct. But I'm very curious about this company, AEW, they seem to be having a lot of problems backstage. They seem to be having, sorry, I thought I heard a knock at the door. They seem to be having a little bit of a breaking down of things, which is disturbing to me. It's not the time for that. As many of you know, Triple H, Hunter Hearst Helmsley, or Hunter Hearst Helmsley McMahon, he took over at the WWE, and he's changing things for the better, most people would say. The ratings are actually going up. People are watching wrestling again. It's the wrong time to be having these issues backstage. They got to get it together over there, because if they don't, then Hunter is just going to take all the good wrestlers and it's going to be a complete shutout. Every individual matters. Every talent matters. And a lot of one of the biggest mistakes AEW has made is they've relied too much on the talent that the WWE has let go. That kind of creates a perception. It creates a perception that this is lesser than the other company. This isn't the big leagues. And I think it's great that those stars were able to find a place, but I think they're banking too much on the initial hype, because you hear somebody is getting released, everybody talks about it. But the thing is, if they don't have that drawing power, I mean, there's a reason the other company got rid of them. And if they don't have that drawing power, then why are you writing them up to a new fresh contract? You should let them go down to the indies, learn, work their way back up, see if they actually have the grit and determination to survive in the business. And only then, if they start to shine, then you should sign them. That's my opinion. But I know you guys probably care about wrestling and MMA about as much as you care about baseball. But this is the after portion of the show, so I don't think it's a big deal to talk about a few random topics. And you can always come on here and talk about what you want. We don't always have to be in paranormal, supernatural mode. I know that's what you guys want to hear. I know you don't want me to bring on guests that aren't related to the act of going down the rabbit hole. But it's good to get off topic. I mean, this is radio. It's podcasting. There's a lot to talk about. There's a whole world out there of podcasting. A lot of these people, like, for example, people from the Howard Stern show. It used to be that Howard Stern had all the power. And if you got on his bad side, he'll kick you off his show, or he won't bring you on his show. He won't pick up your call. And no one will ever hear from you again. But a lot of that power has been stripped away, because, like, Artie Lang, for example, he left Howard's show. You know, he had the suicide attempt, which was very sad. And he got cut off from Howard. Like, Howard would not have him back on his show. He wouldn't let him promote his book or anything like that. But Joe Rogan had him on his podcast. So a lot more people listen to Joe Rogan than Howard Stern at this point. You know, I've talked about this before. I keep my eye on the radio podcasting scene. And Joe Rogan probably at this point has 8 times as many listeners as Howard. Like, Howard probably has like 1 million. Joe Rogan has like 8 million. So Artie Lang going on Joe Rogan is bigger than Artie Lang being on the Stern show. That's just one example. A lot of these guys are putting on their own podcasts. Like, let's say you're an ex-reality star, or you used to be on a sitcom back in the 70s or 80s. You come out with a podcast and people remember you, and people find you. They see you on social media posting your show and they give you a listen. And that, I love that, because it takes power away from the big wigs. It lets anybody come on here and put on a show. Anybody that has something to say, and anybody can do it. It takes work. But when I hear people tell me, "Oh, Daniel, you inspired me to start a show," or "Daniel, I want to do what you do," people that want to kind of learn from me or invite some of the same guests on and stuff like that, I'm all for that stuff. I'm not going to get mad. You know, I've talked about this many times. I'm not going to get mad at you if you do a similar show and invite the same guests on. You're just helping everybody if you're doing that. This is a collective effort. I don't charge for the show. It's a great show that I give away for free. I do ask for donations, if you don't mind. Your donations help me quite a bit. Your donations really do keep me afloat. Thank you again so much to all of the people that have donated. You make all the difference in the world. You allow me to pay my bills. You allow me to create a situation for myself where I'm actually able to do this show frequently. You know, since COVID, I've been struggling like everybody else. It's been hard for me to do this show at times, but those donations have made all the difference. And as you know, my goal is to do a show just purely off donations and just not even like work, because this is work. I'd like to just do this show maybe every day, every other day, 5 days a week, something like that. That's always kind of been the goal that I wanted to work towards. I've tried to do it at times. I tend to get pretty burnt out if I'm working full time and I got to switch gears, you know, spend the whole weekend on a show. That's fine. But then if I have to do it on weekdays too, that's really hard. So really what I need to do is I need to eliminate work. I suppose that's a little bit communist of me. I want to eliminate work or work far less. Oh, speaking of communism, speaking of Marxism, huge amount of blowback on that last show with Shane Wren. I absolutely love Shane Wren. I thought he was fascinating. But I knew going in that it would be a very controversial broadcast. And I didn't do it to troll or to suck people in or anything like that. I did it because I felt like it was time to have a little bit more balls and do a show about something that I feel strongly about. No. I'm not a Marxist or a communist. But at some point in the past years, I began listening to some of the arguments and looking into it a little bit. And I don't feel personally that communism works or would ever work, because it goes against human nature. It goes against the hierarchical nature of humans. It's never been proven that it can be a working system. But the way that people become so irate if you bring up Marxism or communism or socialism, the way that they, you know, left or right, they all, people on the left don't like being accused of being commies or anything like that. They're probably a little bit more apt to admit it these days, but traditionally they have not liked that label either. In fact, people have been kicked out of this country for being communist. But if you're a working class person and you bust your ass every day for a boss that doesn't appreciate you and lords over you and uses your job itself as leverage against you to bully you, and if you can perceive that this system is this type of thing is going on with the entire system, if you can perceive how much you're being exploited as an individual, then this stuff starts to make sense. Like, if you are a normal working class person, if you're part of the 97% or the 99% or whatever, why would you defend the 1%? Because theoretically, someday you will become one of them, or your children will become one. Most likely, that's not going to happen. It's just the truth. This is real talk. Most likely, if you're born poor, you're going to die poor. And isn't it more compassionate to create a system where everybody can enjoy some sort of quality of life, where we can take care of the mentally ill or the sick? And don't we already have a lot of socialism in place with the minimum wage, with the laws against child labor, things of that nature? That's very socialist stuff. I mean, I know this is thought crime, right? This is thought crime. And again, I'm not a communist or Marxist. I'm probably more of like a libertarian if I really had to pick a label. I do enjoy free enterprise and democracy and capitalism. Obviously, that's how I've survived and that's the system I've been a part of. But why get so angry if somebody just presents you with an opposite viewpoint? Shouldn't the truth stand on its own? Why do you have to get so mad and call people names or tell them that they're stupid, or how dare they even bring the topic up? How dare they even approach the topic? How dare they even go there in this fine country that we have running right now? Now, I understand it. I felt that way myself. I would get into arguments with people on social media and otherwise about, you know, how stupid they were. I'd tell them how stupid they were, and I'd tell them all the typical arguments that you hear. But at some point, I just started to realize it's all mind control. Once I really accepted, once I learned and accepted the fact that there is a world government, there are the 13 families, there is an Illuminati. Once I truly understood and accepted that fact, and I accepted it beyond a shadow of a doubt because I was having real up-close personal experiences with these people and I was learning things. Once that happened, a switch flipped and I started to just see it. You know, it's they're using dualism. They're using the opposite ends of the spectrum to manipulate us. East versus West. Communism versus capitalism. It's all one way over here. It's all the other way over here. You know, it's kind of like that Tower of Babel effect where everybody's kept at a different viewpoint. That way they can't ever come together and usurp the gods of this world. And truthfully, the truth is in the middle. That's where just about every modern day society is ending up, somewhere in the middle, right? Like, they're not totally capitalist. It's not capitalism run rampant, nor is it true communism. And people say, oh, how dare you? This guy sucks. He's promoting communism. No, I'm not. What I'm promoting is freedom of thought. What I'm promoting is you being able to go look up this stuff and be able to read it with an unbiased mind without having a complete breakdown because you think somebody's going to take away your freedom. I hate to break it to you, but you don't have that much freedom as you think. You have about as much freedom as how much money you have. Let's put it that way. Can you stop everything and drop everything and go to Europe right now? Or if you're already in Europe, can you drop everything and come to America? Probably not. You're probably chained to certain things. You probably have certain responsibilities. But people that have the money, they can. They do 1/10 of the work that you do, and they collect 90% of the profit. Why? Because they are better than you? Not really. They just have more money for whatever reason. They're more obsessed with making money. They got it passed down to them. They had some lucky breaks. They're just really smart. They found ways to make it work. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's free enterprise. But is that really the society we want to live in? Where the stupid people are trampled upon? I've heard every argument. I've seen both sides of the argument. And I really do think that Plato's utopia is the best utopia we can come up with. Have you looked into that, Plato's utopia? Have you looked into utopia in general? Like, what would that mean? Could you come up with something better? Because I see what's going on out there, and I don't like it. It's sad. People are starving. The mentally ill are talking to voices. They're swinging things at me, walking around with homemade flamethrowers, walking around with homemade torches, swinging around long metal objects. Give these people some help. And how much money are you sending to Ukraine? So your president, Dark Biden, who has all these allegations going on, and his son has all these allegations going on, he's giving all your money to another country, and you're okay with that? Or if you're not okay with that, you're like all about Trump, and Trump's the savior, and Trump's going to do this or that. These I said this on the last show, these guys are literally cousins. They're cousins. They've all been to the same Epstein Islands. They've all interacted with the same shady individuals and the same evil system. It's all the same ball of wax. And, you know, I understand that this is my perspective. I understand I might not be correct about everything. I understand I might have, you know, like what we were talking about earlier with the guest. I know I might have some tunnel vision on the matter. I'll totally accept that. But, I mean, haven't I presented enough evidence for you? Must I do more? The worst thing you could ever do is believe what they say is reality and what they say is true. because then you get the ball lightning, and then you get the swamp gas, and then you get the what was the other one? The weather balloon. It was a weather balloon. Bigfoot is a weather balloon. Shadow people are weather balloons. See that shadow person over there? That's just a weather balloon. Okay. The queen. The queen has died. She passed away. She was very old. She was very rich and successful in her life based on her lineage. Apparently she did some pretty terrible things in her life. There's allegations of her kidnapping children or ordering a hit on Lady Di. Supposedly she had all this power in the hidden world with the secret societies. She was always hobnobbing with all these big wig sort of people that we know actually run the world behind the scenes. And people are getting mad. Like, if you make a joke about the queen passing away, how dare you? That was a good woman. She was a good person. How dare you? That's so disrespectful and mean. Okay. Like, I might sound cold saying this, but who cares? Right? That family, we know what they are. We know that Prince Charles openly brags about being related to Vlad Dracula. We know that they're kissing cousins. We know that they love incest, right? Megxit is related to Harry, and Kate's related to William. They're cousins, and they literally kiss each other, and they do a lot more than that, let me tell you. And it's not through a hole in a sheet. It's full on. These people are nasty, incestual hybrids. And I don't care if any of them die. You know who I care about? I care about the homeless guy down the street who's starving to death. I don't care about somebody with billions and trillions and gazillions of dollars who dies of old age, who spent their whole life drinking the blood of the innocent and sucking away all the people's energy and finances through the taxes. Somebody who has a bunch of jewels that they got from the murdered Romanov family. The jewels. You know what? Bitch, fuck your jewels. I'll tell you what to do with your jewels, with the family jewels. You can turn them sideways and you can stick them up. Oh, actually, she's not going to be able to do that because she passed away. But I suppose at this point I'm talking to Charles. Take those family jewels, turn them sideways, shine them up real good, and stick them right up your vampire ass. That's how I feel about the royals. Oh, the queen. She passed away last night. It was very traumatic. Harry was in tears. Meghan, she was in tears as well. She dropped the baby, and it bounced. But don't worry, the child is okay, because he bears the mark of Cain. That's the idea, right? I probably sound awful right now. I probably sound horrible. By the way, during our break, you may have heard some tunes playing. That was our buddy Todd in the studio. That was the show's band, featuring Todd, his cousin Eric, and of course Al. Our buddy Al is a part of that as well. So those three have produced so much music for this show. And I love playing their outtakes during the break. That's like the new thing that I've been doing lately. I love the atmosphere that it creates. We're in the garage with Todd and friends, or Todd, Al, and Eric. T-A-E. Or T-E-A. T. Yeah, the tea party. Gangster as hell. Love those guys. Shout out to them. And likewise, people who defend the queen. People defend Joe Biden the same way. Like, what type of lowly individual are you where you're going to spend your free personal time defending Joe Biden? Could you not be more programmed? Could you not be more of a sheeple? And these people, they're trying so hard to come off as smart. Oh, I'm informed. I read the latest headlines. I know what's going on. I'm a part of things. I'm committed. I'm making a difference. No, you're not. You're a moron. You're one of the proletarian masses. The deceived. The dead. You are part of who they call the dead. Yes, you are deceived. I am deceived as well, but perhaps less so. But yeah, that communist show is controversial indeed. But you know what? I don't care. We don't care. Because what's more important than everybody liking you? The truth. The truth is what's important. The truth. And I thank you for your support. I thank you for every inkling of support that you have given to me, given to this show. There are great times ahead. But one thing I'm not going to do is I'm not going to do this show to make people like me, because I don't give a shit about hanging out with the greater paranormal community or, you know, all these people. Why would I? Are they going to give me money? Are they going to do anything for me? No, they're not. So why don't I just have the people on this show that are actually interesting, right? You don't have to always have, whoever. What's a good example? I don't want to insult anybody, but you know what I mean? Like these guests you always hear going coast to coast time and time again. Linda Moulton Howe talking like this. We saw some crop circles. That's right, George. Let me have another cigarette. We saw some crop circles. And the men in black called me. And they slapped this shit out of me. But I don't care, George. I'm going to keep going out there. Because I'm the greatest. Like, how much of a disinfo agent is she? She's been accused by just about everybody. And I know she'll never come on this show, and I don't want her on this show. Because, quite frankly, I think she sucks. Yeah, I said it. I said the dirty words. I don't want her on here. I don't need her. She's just going to come on here, and she's going to talk like this. And I'm going to say, Linda, stop smoking cigarettes. Or I'm going to say, Linda, take George's member out of your mouth, out of your throat. And then maybe you'll actually be able to talk normal like I do with my amazing Washingtonian accent that everybody's so envious of. Just like they're all envious of my Mariners or my Seahawks. Well, not the Seahawks, but you know what I'm talking about. Moving on. So there's a lot of cool TV shows coming out. Let's talk about that a little bit. Game of Thrones, House of the Dragon. Apparently, this show is full of occult symbology. I mean, I could probably do a whole program on all the different occult symbology in the Game of Thrones show, the first one, the one that everybody watched. I've talked about it before, but this new logo for the House of the Dragon, if you look at the way that dragon's tail is arranged, those who are watching the live show, you can see it on my phone. It actually has 666 in it. Pretty crazy, huh? These people always find a way to put 666 in everything. Like no matter what you're looking at, if you look close enough, you'll see 666 in there. And obviously, the whole dragon thing, people being related to dragons, it bears a strong hybrid theme. I haven't actually watched the new show. I probably won't because I'm sick of it. How can anybody be interested in this after the last episode of the original show? Really? Like Khaleesi acting like a total C-word out of nowhere? And her boyfriend Jon Snow has to kill her? That's what I hate about so many of these movies and shows. They try too hard to be cool and trendy. Nobody wants to have a happy ending. You have to have a bad ending because that's more artistic. That's more realistic. We're doing something different. The bad guys win. We're doing something different. Khaleesi, she's having this huge episode. She's clearly having some sort of menopause or something like that. It was stupid. It was crappy. And this is not even something that was created by the guy that writes the books. This is something they did for the TV show. I'm not going to keep supporting that. So anyways, moving on. Willow. They're making a show about Willow. You know Willow, the dwarf, the peck? Or the little person? Dwarf is a bad word. But Willow. You know, Mad Mortigan, Val Kilmer, that Willow? They're making a show out of it. That sounds kind of cool. I could get into that. You know, there's magic. It's just a great story. I don't know if you've seen that. I'm a little bit older, so I was a huge fan of this movie as a child. I've probably seen it 100,000 times. I can get into that. Another one is Cobra Kai. That's back on air. And fantastic as usual. I'm probably about halfway through the season and loving it. It's so... If you were a fan of the original movies, which most people probably are, or at least most people over 30, closer to 40, are probably, you know, they remember everything about those movies, you will love Cobra Kai. And it's continuing to be good. It hasn't fallen off the wagon yet. Most shows start to suck around, what, season 4 or 5? And I'm talking about the good ones. This show's still going strong. I'm still enjoying it. I'm still looking forward to every episode. So obviously check out Cobra Kai. And then movies. So we got a lot of superhero movies coming out. Star Wars stuff, which I'm sick of. I'm so tired of Star Wars. They've milked that license so much. And the superhero stuff is starting to get really cringe as well. I mean, come on. You're making a movie about every crappy hero that nobody cares about. You're not even giving people enough time to absorb this stuff. You're not even, you know, looking at what works and what doesn't. They're just, Disney's taking every Marvel character that's ever been created and making a movie about them, because that's how shitty they are. And it's all, you know, woke stuff. Like, we're going to force you to change and force you to think a different way because we're going to target your kids with our political views. And one of the major controversies right now is this new Little Mermaid movie, right? This new Little Mermaid movie. I love you guys, by the way. I fucking love you guys. You are so awesome. The fans of this show are so awesome. I love when you join me on the live show. I love when you watch the replay. I love when you interact. I love when you join the Discord. If you want to join the Discord, go to endofdaysradio.com, click on the link. Join our community there. I know I've been away for a while and action has kind of slowed down, but this is the second show since coming back. We're trying to build that momentum again, and we will reach the same heights that we always have. There's haters out there. There's people that don't like me. There's people that want me to fail. There's people that just talk so much shit about me. But why do they do this? It's because they know I've got it. They know I've got the mojo. They know that I am backed by forces that are so incredible that the human mind cannot even grasp who they are or what they are. They cannot grasp what goes on behind the scenes of here. And the most they can do is just tear me down. Oh, Daniel, he's lost his edge. He has a big forehead. His show sucks. Right? You know, you always hear the same things. Look at him with his stupid pirate flag. What is he trying to be, some kind of pirate? He's trying to be cool. No, I'm not trying to be cool. I fly that flag because it's a symbol of rebellion. It's a symbol of not letting the system control me. And, you know, it very well might be an evil symbol of skull and bones and Illuminati piracy, but I still like it. And I'm not going to put up with that shit. If you attack me, I'll come right back at you. That's just how I play. I don't back down. I'm a real man. I'm a cowboy. I'm not a vengeful person, but I will not stand here or sit here and let myself be torn to shreds. I will shoot a promo on you. I will come right back after you if you try to take me down, because I have to. I have to defend myself, just like you have to defend yourselves. And I know there's a lot of hate out there for me. And why this is, it's probably because I go to places that others don't. I'm willing to talk about black magic and Satanism. I'm willing to learn about it. I'm willing to talk about communism and socialism and Marxism. I'm not biased or afraid of it. Now, I'm not going to do a show about some nasty shit like bestiality. I mean, I have my ethics, but I'm not afraid to explore the things that most are afraid to explore. The guests on my show that come on are not afraid to explore the things that most people are afraid to explore. We go deep without limits because that's how we get to the truth, by not limiting ourselves. And no, I'm not a communist or a Satanist. I'm not a satanic commie. I've just looked at the other side of the spectrum. And the Satanism stuff was not for me. Mainly because I had no idea that it was even Satanism that I was getting into. I was manipulated by forces that are unseen and that are tricky. Like what Chaz was talking about earlier. These entities are tricky. And they can get you to believe things. They can get you to go down certain rabbit holes. They can do that to you. Whatever they are, if they're part of our consciousness, if they're just imaginary, if they're from another dimension, if they're robots or AI, how could I ever know? But I do know that they exist, and I do know that people become possessed by them, and it always starts showing up in the movies. Like this movie, I think it's called Smile. There's an old movie called Fallen with Denzel Washington. The demons are jumping from person to person. That really happens. Because they are legion, and that's what they do. And they're out there possessing people. They're in our leaders, most likely. Something's going on with our leaders. And, of course, it's scary. It's easier not to believe in these things. It's easier to pretend like it's all a bunch of BS. But deep in your heart, you know it's true. Deep in your heart, you know that there's reality behind the fantasy. Why do you watch Netflix shows that are about vampires and dinosaurs and unicorns and crap like that? Why are you still into that? There's this something inside of you that is attracted to this stuff. You know why? Because that's your fucking memories. That's the memories of your culture. Something like that. Sorry, I just need another little sip of the LaCroix. There's a part of you that craves these things. That craves the magic of old. The forgotten kingdom of lore. The forgotten reality of what lies yonder, beyond the veil, in the mind of the magician. Ooh. Ooh. I'm putting you in a trance. I'm using magic on you right now. You will donate to End of Days Radio. Oh, I'm just joking. Calm down. I'm not after your money. But if you wouldn't mind buying me a cup of coffee, helping me make ends meet, I do very much appreciate that. I love you guys, and I love you guys that love this show. And this show is about to hit new heights. Because check out this badass studio behind me. Yes, that's my bed that I sleep on. But, hey, I gotta sleep somewhere. I would much rather have an actual studio with a couch and multiple cameras and some kind of badass fluorescent LED custom-made sign behind me that costs 15 grand. Sure, I would love to have those things, but for now, I've got my $1 light string, my $1 light string that I got from the Dollar Tree, and I have my black light and my posters. Yes. I have a healthy self-image, and that is why some people dislike me, because I don't hate myself. When you hate yourself, you want everybody else around you to hate themselves as well. And sadly, most people out there hate themselves. It's the truth. I like to think that there's more healthy people than unhealthy people, and perhaps there were in the past when we had families and when we actually had morals. But these days, I think people are cray-cray. I really do. I think there's demons in a lot of people. Personal demons, actual demons. I think that there's some weird shit going on with society. And if you really think about it, I think you would agree with me. Things are getting really weird, aren't they? Stranger Things? Yeah, that's the political scene. Hillary Clinton searching for the Tomb of Gilgamesh, things of that nature. And unfortunately, when you start digging into this stuff, that's when reality starts breaking down. That's when you get the, you know, like what Chaz was talking about earlier, you know, fantastic conversation. You get that weird woo stuff starting to happen around you, right? You get gang stalked, start having weird experience with bots. You know, I saw this guy on Twitter and he's selling these drawings and he's doing something magical to them. And he's saying, if you own one of these NFTs, excuse me, if you own one of them, you'll have bots come after you. You know, those demonic AI or whatever they are that harass people. And sure, it's more comforting to pretend like nothing of that nature exists. We always try to jump back into that protective bubble. But the truth is, man, you got to lose the fear, because fear is the mind killer. And you'll never make it in this supernatural game unless you can start to deal with your fear. You will not make it. I know you miss me. I know you miss me a lot. But I can't do anything about that unless you reach out and you give me some kind of angle. I can't fix things unless you work with me. I can't connect with you unless you connect with me. And that's true for everybody out there. It takes one. Sometimes you have to take one to give one. That's the truth. That's something I learned in boxing. Sometimes you have to take one to give one. If you want your life to get better, you have to start to give, and then you'll be able to take. You can't just take. That doesn't work. That doesn't work for me. And if you haven't learned that from by now, then you're going to have a hard time in life. A lot of people approach life from that perspective, right? It's smart to be selfish. There's truth to that. But overall, will you truly benefit? Or will you become like the rest, the scum out there? The scum always rises to the top. And that's the situation we're in. We are literally surrounded by scum. And some of us, we do what we can to escape it. We collect magic cards. And we never even play the game against anybody. We get really into video games or reading or guitar or whatever, right? Anything that will take us away from conflict. Because the truth is, if you want to go out there, if you want to leave your room, you got to reach out and you got to connect with people. You're not going to get anywhere on your own. It takes a village to raise a child, right? And if you are tired of being alone, if you're tired of having to go to battle on your own, then you got to stop thinking that way. You got to get out, you got to get off your butt, and you got to go out there and you have to stop being afraid of people. You're going to get in fights. You're going to have conflict. You're going to be pushed beyond what you are able to handle, but you can handle it. If you're not ready to fight, then you're not ready to live. You have to fight forever. You have to fight forever. Do you understand the words that are coming out of my mouth? You have to fight forever. So as you know, today's Sunday. Tomorrow, there's a very important football game happening between the Denver Broncos and the Seattle Seahawks. Our beloved quarterback, Russell Wilson, now plays for the Denver Broncos. This game means a lot more than what it does on the surface. There's layers and layers here. I hope we win. I'm praying. Some of you would tell me that God doesn't care about football. That's probably true. But if he doesn't care, why did he invent it in the first place? Right? Why is it such a popular sport? Why do so many people collect football cards and baseball cards? And people that don't even play football. I would have played football. I didn't know how. I didn't understand how to sign up. I didn't get it. I was too shy. Maybe it's good because I didn't get 20 concussions. But you don't have to be a former football player to watch football. You don't have to be a genius to investigate the paranormal. You don't have to be a witch to summon a demon. Chances are you've done it many times already without realizing it by watching those scary movies or by jerking off alone in the dark to porn made by people that put demons into their porn. Yeah. Stuff like that is going on out there. You don't know what this stuff is doing to you. This technologic, occulted world being pushed on us by trillionaires who hide in the dark shadows. You don't know what it's doing to you. Look what's happening around us. How are you feeling? Are you happy? I hope so. Perhaps one day you will learn the truth. But until then, I must bid you adieu. I'm going to move on. I'm going to move on with my day. I hope you enjoyed today's episode because we're back on track, baby. And I have some surprises for you. I have some beautiful shows coming up. Oh my God. Everything that you love about this show, everything that you hate about this show is going to be coming at you times 10. I don't care if you hate this show as long as you listen. I don't care if you hate this show as long as you talk about it. I don't care if you hate me because you're still giving me your energy. It's just coming in. It's coming in, right? No, I don't want you to hate me. I want to be loved by all. We all do, right? But if I can just reach one person who goes out there and looks into this stuff and realizes the world is not what it seems and realizes how bizarre and frightful it really is out there. If I could do that for just one person, if I could make one person poop their pants or completely lose their sanity, then I will die a happy man. Sometimes insanity and madness is the only place we have left to go. But if you can go crazy, if you can go insane, and you can come back and be sane again, oh, will you be strong after that point? Oh, will you be a badass? Will you have it together? If you can look into the eye of Cthulhu and come back somehow to tell us all about it, if you can do that, then you will have truly ascended and you will be a true warrior. You will be one of us. And what are we? I don't know. Perhaps we'll find out in the future. But I know that there's something that connects us all, something spiritual. When we meet up, that is a manifestation. When we come into contact, that's a manifestation. When you get to know me and I get to know you and we interact, that's predestined. It's destiny, baby. And we share a destiny. And it's unfolding right before us. I'm going to be 40 years old soon. 40 years cold. I've struggled with that. I've struggled with aging, hair loss, fatigue. I've struggled with, not being sexually active as I was when I was in my 20s. Not wanting to be. Not really caring as much. It's something that happens with age, and I'm fine with it. I'm fine with not bouncing off the walls anymore. I'm fine with not wanting to party every day. I've been there. I've done that. I had my time. It's all fair. I don't need more. I'm ready to live my dignified middle-aged existence, and I don't have to be an MMA fighter or the funniest guy on the internet, or the most knowledgeable. I don't have to compete anymore. I'm past that. I've begun to detach from my ego, not with drugs, but with just understanding of what it is and that it doesn't really exist. That is growth. And that is what I have accomplished. But like I said, I'm leaving the show right now. Of course, I'll be back soon. In fact, I will be back on the 25th, probably before then, but for sure on the 25th at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, we will be doing a badass roundhouse show with General Lee and Native American representative Raven. Oh man, is this going to be killer. Lights on, lights off, lights definitely going to be on for this episode. And I hope to see you here live. I hope to see you here. Until then, good night, everybody.
You can have a little chee, you know, a little funny noise.
Yeah.
And then go back to the beat. Like you'll say something and then there'll be a sound effect to reflect what you said.
Okay, well, I guess I better sing
then. I'm just telling you what a break is. There could be a phone ringing. And I can say something like, can somebody please answer the damn phone? Somebody get your damn phone!
Somebody calling. Somebody's calling you in the night. Hoping that you We are live!
Fuck, I'm so far out of fucking skin with this. I don't know what's up. I can't get it.
I just can't find it. You're not recording right now, are you?
Yeah.
Well, you don't know.
It's gonna play that same room.
We are live!
What the fuck was that? Boy. Weird.
Here I am left standing. I never had a gun. I'm still standing here now. Am I the only one? I can hear your footsteps. They always surround me. Give me one good reason that I should believe.
M-O-J-S.
Thinking of days.
Of days.
And of days.
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 Radio show.
That's not
Yeah!
Let's check it out. Let's see how it sounds.